It's time for Let's Talk Legal with Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins from the law firm of Harvell and Collins. If you have a legal question, they can give you the answer. Call now at 252-222-4848.
And I'd like to welcome Cecil Harvell to Harvell and Collins Let's Talk Legal. Good morning, Cecil. How are you?
Good. Good morning, Mike. How are you?
I am fine. I'm down one attorney this morning. I take it Wes is probably elsewhere or perhaps on his way to court.
Correct. Out of town motions and hearings. That's correct. Yep.
It just goes to show you, Cecil, you know, despite everything, life goes on. And, you know, your legal issues, they continue on. And the courts are open. And Harvell and Collins has been open, never shut down during the pandemic. And thank goodness for that. Life goes on.
It absolutely does. Listen, Mike, last week and the week before, we've kind of touched around some issues. And one of the issues that we kind of addressed is the rights of the surviving spouse in an estate.
Yep.
This is a really big cookie right here to talk about. Lots of issues. And it all begins with the idea. And I tell you, Mike, it just yesterday it happened. Friday it happened. Thursday it happened. There's almost just not a day that goes by that a client does not come in, either the husband or the wife. Many times they are in a second marriage.
Yep.
And they just got that, you know, life is good for them. And they are now making out their estate plans. And the wife is saying, now I do want all of my assets to pass on to my children from my first marriage. My husband, is just fine. He doesn't need my assets. He has, you know, a military retirement. He has, you know, assets in the bank, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
And we've discussed this. Well, of course, the problem, Mike, with that is that in the state of North Carolina, a surviving spouse has a statutory elective share right to the estate. And this can be asserted by either the spouse or by their agent under a power of attorney if her husband were to become, you know, later on in years infirm in some way, then his agent under the power of attorney could elect this elective share. And so it is a challenge now to be able to explain to this nice lady that, that her husband has a right in her estate, notwithstanding what her intentions might be.
Mm-hmm.
And so we now are in a planning mode where we kind of have to plan around this. Now, if they by chance, obtained and signed a recorded prenuptial agreement, then that is going to really help. And this issue that I'm talking about right now will most likely go away because the prenup would have waived this, elective share right. Okay.
Okay.
But many people just do not have the prenup. And we are then in a situation where we need to plan around this elective share.
You hear the term, and I don't want to take you off your track here because you're going.
Uh-huh.
It's a big bag to unpack here. But a prenup, you hear it talked a lot about, sometimes pejoratively, but other times, once you get married, once you put the ring on the finger, that's done. It's too late to do a prenup. You got to do it before you take out a marriage certificate or before you actually get wedded, married.
Well, it is too late to do a prenup because a prenup, you know, by definition is pre or before or ante the marriage.
Right.
But it isn't too late, Mike, to do a postnup.
Oh.
And there does exist in the law such a contract known as a postnuptial or now I might say during marriage contract. And I did one of those last week in a file just identical to what I just explained.
Mm-hmm.
In that after I told the wife about her husband having a right in her estate, having rights in her estate. I then said, do you think your husband, in light of the fact that he does have his own assets, he's going to be financially secure if anything happened to you, he has a close relationship with your children from a prior marriage, do you think he would have a problem with a postnuptial agreement? And she says, no, I don't think he would have a problem with that at all. Will that solve my problem? And of course it will. And so in that particular file, the solution was that we prepare a postnuptial agreement, and we did do that. Now I might say though, Mike, that does require that not only the wife, but also the husband have independent, separate and distinct lawyers so that they can be fully informed on the rights that they are waiving. So in that particular file, we had to then engage another law firm to represent either the husband or the wife.
And when you say separate lawyers, they're outside the law firm. In other words, it couldn't be Cecil Harvell representing the husband and Wes Collins representing the wife. It's got to be outside at another firm for the other party.
That's correct.
Okay. You don't hear much talk of postnups, though. You hear prenup a lot, but you don't hear postnup. Interesting.
Yeah, well, they're out there.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Okay. Now, another option for this lady would have been to place the percentage, which in her file was as high as 50%, to place that percentage into an elective share trust if she were to die, and to give her husband a lifetime right, if you will, to those trust assets. And then upon the death of the husband, those trust assets would pass back to her children. So this is a very viable and typical plan of action that we also will talk to clients about when we're confronted with these spousal issues. And again, to repeat, you know, the goal here that the client is saying is that, you know, my husband or my wife have sufficient assets, and I do want my assets to go to my children from my prior marriage if something were to happen to me. And they do not have a prenup. And so one of the alternatives that could be discussed with them is that since the husband has the right to this elective share, it can just simply not be given to him outright so that it passes back to his children, but it simply goes into a trust and it's separate and distinct. And then upon the death of the husband, it passes back to the children.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah. It's a very good option.
You know, and I'm sure there's people listening that are in that same boat that haven't done anything in this regard. It's not something that you can just go online and Google and find out for yourself. You really do need to have some serious counsel in this, such as Harvell and Collins offers. This is a minimal investment to save a lifetime of work and angst when you pass. The consultation is just, how long does the consultation take with you or one of your other attorneys at Harvell and Collins?
Well, usually these appointments, the initial appointments with a client like this, just to get the facts and circumstances on paper and to begin to kind of put the puzzle together, which is kind of the way I like to describe this kind of planning, you know, is about an hour, maybe an hour and 15 minutes, something of that nature. After about an hour and 15 minutes, it's kind of nice for the client to have an opportunity to reflect on everything that's been said, and then kind of come back another day, even if it's the very next day or two or three days later, and kind of revisit it all again.
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense.
Right.
Yeah. Very good. Continue.
Now,
continue.
One more thing in terms of spousal rights. There are in the state of North Carolina, and this can get very confusing, when a spouse dies and is left with a surviving spouse, there are certain administrations with the clerk of court through North Carolina law that can occur that are, for lack of a better word, kind of called summary administrations or years support or affidavit administration. All of these are are kind of synonymous with the concept of there really isn't a full probate of the assets of the deceased spouse, because the surviving spouse can file certain elections or designations to take what is in the estate. The problem with these summary administration, with clerks of court, is that they do not, because of the fact that a formal estate is not open, they do not run the statute relative to barring creditors. And we at Harvell and Collins feel that this is a very important protection that our clients need, and should take advantage of, which is to run the newspaper ad for 4 weeks. It's about $150, mm-hmm. And allow the surviving spouse to then rest at home, if you will, for the remainder of their life, knowing for certain that no one is going to come knocking on the door relative to an unknown creditor of their deceased spouse. Also, certain of those summary administrations make the surviving spouse liable for the debts of the of their spouse. They become personally liable, and as we know, that is never the case in an estate, that a husband or wife is personally liable for the debts of their spouse. Now, on joint debt, they are jointly liable. Mm-hmm. But if the spouse is singularly liable on a credit card or something of that nature, and there are not sufficient assets in the estate to take care of that, that does not mean that the surviving spouse has to step up to the plate and pay that that outstanding bill. But if you don't run a full administration of an estate and run the advertisement in the newspaper, then under those circumstances, the surviving spouse could become liable. So we at our law firm are not encouraging of surviving spouses to use many times these shortcut avenues to transfer assets from their wife to their husband when the wife dies, or vice versa.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense. And we touched on this subject months ago, and then that was news to me, and I'm sure other listeners out there, about credit cards held solely by the decedent spouse that the surviving spouse isn't liable for. That's interesting. It's very helpful to know that, because people would just, human nature would say, well, you know, the debt was, you know, incurred by her, I'm going to pay the credit card. Here comes the bill each month, and they pay it off when they may not have been on the hook for it, so to speak. So good advice there. Cecil, let's take a break here at that point, and we'll come back with more of Harvell and Collins Let's Talk Legal. And if you wish to call the firm today, their phone number is 252-726-9050. Or you can go online to harvellandcollins.com. We'll be right back with more of Let's Talk Legal with Cecil Harvell after this. Welcome back to Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins. And on the phone with us this morning, Cecil Harvell. And Cecil, you're right. The rights of a surviving spouse, it is a big cookie. We've taken a few bites out of it, but there's still more to consume, I think, on this topic.
Yes. We have a file right now in our office where a spouse died and left a surviving spouse. And we did, in fact, open up the estate so as to run the notice to creditors. And then the adult children kind of have questioned that, like, mm-hmm. you know, why did you feel that you needed to open up a probate estate when, you know, the spouse, meaning the surviving spouse, could just simply elect year's support in the file or summary administration or something of that nature. Well, The problem with doing those shortcuts, as I have explained, is that I want to put, first of all, we are in a law office, and the client has a very high expectation of what the results and outcomes might be. And if I advise the client to take the shortcut, even though they might go a little bit quicker, not much, mm-hmm. or be a tad less expensive, but not much, the bottom line is, what if in 6 months, 9 months, or a year, a bill comes to the door and the surviving spouse is personally liable for it? And so we just simply, as a law firm, are not able to put and advise a surviving spouse to take those routes. Now, what gets confusing here a bit, Mike, is that the clerk of court will tell, you know, a surviving spouse, clerks, of course, they're assistant clerks, and they're doing a great job. But they will, yes, absolutely, those assets could have passed by summary administration or by, you know, years support affidavits. Yes, that would have worked. Well, those are clerks of court that are, they are not lawyers, mm-hmm. and they do not necessarily see the other end of this coin that can turn and come knocking. It's kind of a bit of a, if it makes sense, Mike, it's kind of like the standard by which we, as other possible loopholes for our surviving spouse, and put them in a 100% safe environment.
Yeah, I'm just hearing your description of it, and again, you're great in making the complex sound simple. It's, you know, the person taking that shortcut, a penny wise, pound foolish, but by going the proper channels through Harvell and Collins, you, in a sense, have made your client bulletproof.
Exactly.
Right?
That's exactly true. Right. And otherwise, you know, they are not.
Yeah.
And I might also say that the other shortcuts also require some time and effort, and therefore some cost and expense.
Mm-hmm.
It's not as if they're free, okay? So you really are comparing the difference in the cost between the shortcuts and the cost for the more safeguard position with regard to any kind of bar to the creditors. We feel strongly that that's a very important advantage that our clients should take advantage of.
And I think it bears repeating too. And you have to, you know, have empathy for your clients, or soon, you know, your prospect, people that will be your clients, that they don't understand this. And sometimes they think that's the easy remedy, the shortcut. And I have Wes Collins on my shoulder here whispering, doc in a box. You know, you go online and you buy a doc in a box will, when you should be sitting down with Harvell and Collins, spending, a little bit of time, an hour or so, and maybe spending a tad more in a coin, but still, it's bulletproof when you walk out of that office versus when the UPS guy drops the doc in a box off on your porch. A big difference.
That's right. Yeah. That's correct. So the issues between a surviving spouse and an estate, and of course, obviously, their surviving husband or wife, you know, as we begin to see here, it is complex. It can be made simple, like you just said, Mike. Mm-hmm. We can make it simple, and it certainly doesn't need to be cost, you know, extraordinary or anything like that. But there certainly are some issues to discuss. There are issues to discuss on the planning side, on the front side of the file, as I've discussed, with the elective share trust or possibly a postnuptial agreement. But then these same issues confront themselves on the backside.
Yeah, and as you said from the outset too, it seems to be very prevalent in our community and our society with people that just don't have a very simple structure. You know, they have a second marriage, maybe a third marriage, so their life isn't as easily put down on paper, and you see it every day. And I'm sure what we're saying right now resonates with a large majority of the listening audience out there. They're probably shaking their head, yeah, I should be doing this. And
yeah.
They're right. They should be doing this, getting this in place for the future.
So, we have a file in our office that I'll be working on today where a lady has died. She was in a marriage for a long time, 20 or more years, with her husband. But she was a property developer, and she bought a couple of different pieces of properties, development properties, in her own name. They're not joint. Now, the home that they bought was joint with the husband, but the other properties are in her name only. Interestingly, she never updated her will, and her last will and testament, meaning the very last one, leaves her assets to her children, of which there are three children. And so that will go to record and will go to probate because it is her last will and testament. It's in good form. And it leaves everything to the three children. Now, what then happens in a file like this is that the burden now is going to shift to the surviving husband to say, hey, wait a minute, you left these properties that you developed, these development properties. I understand that I own my home, but you left these development properties to your three children, and I've been married to you for 20-plus years, and I think that I should be able to step up to the plate and have ownership of those properties. And so he will need to file what we've already discussed this morning, Mike, which is he will need to file his elective share claim.
Sure.
And he has 6 months to do that, okay? And he better do that, or else he could really be up the creek without a paddle if he lets that deadline go by. These assets would likely then just pass to the three children because he did not file his elective share.
Yeah, the clock is ticking. It's like you said, life goes on. We're going to take a short break here, and we'll come back with our closing segment when we come back after this break. If you'd like to reach Cecil Harvell at Harvell & Collins or any of the staff, call 252-726-9050 or go online to harvellandcollins.com. We'll take a short break here and come back after this. And welcome back to our closing segment on Let's Talk Legal with Cecil Harvell. And a good topic today. You were right. This is a big cookie, but we took some good bites out of it. But there's probably still a little left on the plate. Good topic.
Just to finalize just a sentence or two, Mike,
sure.
Our listeners might be, my word, North Carolina makes surviving spouse law very complicated.
Yeah.
We have to keep in mind, Mike, that this kind of has its origination, these laws, in the philosophy. All laws begin with what we call the philosophy of law or history of law. And North Carolina, as we know, Mike, is a very conservative state. It's going to take a very pro-marriage position. It's going to protect the rights of a spouse because, after all, they are married. North Carolina encourages marriage. And so these laws have been around for a long, long time. Okay.
Yes.
The rights of a spouse in an estate in North Carolina has been there a long time because of North Carolina's philosophy that a marriage is a very important thing.
It's a sacred institution. Very good. And that's a good close on that note, Cecil. Thank you very much. We'll do it again next Tuesday. Let's Talk Legal. And you can call the firm today, the law firm, 252-726-9050.